Ugh, now broadcasting in English.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague's weekend program with me, Jan Richter. Coming up in today's show, in Czech Life, we talk to Jakub Vrána, the first Czech to be hired by Facebook. Then we visit the Sázava Monastery, and later we bring back our popular miniseries from the archives, so please stay tuned for all of that. We begin with a new edition of Czech Life, in which Sara Borůvka meets IT expert Jakub Vrána, who became the first Czech to be hired by the popular social networking service Facebook.
At a conference in the US, the 33-year-old Czech programmer Jakub Vrána made quite an impression on developers from the well-known social networking site Facebook and became the first Czech to be hired by the company. Now he is preparing to move across the ocean and set up a new life in California, near San Francisco, where Facebook's headquarters are located. Ahead of his departure from the Czech Republic, I caught up with him to find out what he's looking forward to and what he will miss, what the interviewing process was like, and which of his projects he thinks caught the Facebook team's attention.
I think that was my projects for programmers working with databases, which I was talking about at some conference in the United States, and there were also a couple of Facebook developers. And I think these projects or these talks on the conference caught the attention of the Facebook hiring staff.
And what were you doing at the conference in the first place?
I sent there some proposals of talks about my products or software, and they were accepted. So I talked there about these products. The main product is Adminer, which is basically some kind of database management tool. If you have some data in the database, with Adminer you can work with the data and edit it and save, list them, and so on.
Your interviewing process, I believe, was quite long and drawn out. So maybe you could just describe how many rounds of interviews you had to go through to get this job.
It had six rounds. The first round was over the phone, and I have a computer, and I was writing there some program or algorithm of some task or question which they told me. So the first round was over the phone. The second round should also be over the phone, but in the time of the second round, I already have been in the US on the conference. So second round was on the site in Facebook office, and next four rounds was also in the Facebook office. And because I was departing soon, so all of these four rounds were taken in one day, in one row. So it wasn't exhausting, but it was quite long, and I passed, so that's it.
Great, congratulations. And now we have all seen maybe the Facebook offices and the Facebook movie, but what does it really look like in there?
It's some kind of very big open space. There are lots of open space. From the outside, the building looks like very small and like some house maybe. But inside, it's very big. It's big space and lots of open space. It's quite a usual business environment, but only there are such big screens everywhere, like monitors, so it's pretty common.
What kind of problems do you think you as a programmer would be solving for Facebook? Do you have any idea what that will be like?
I don't know yet. I'm a PHP developer, and most of the Facebook, mainly the front end, is written in PHP, so I guess I will be doing something in PHP, but I'm not sure what it will be. There will be a bootcamp in start of my employment. It will be 6 weeks of bootcamp where I will get familiar with Facebook technologies and Facebook projects, and in this bootcamp I will choose on which part of Facebook I would like to work.
And do you have an official job title yet?
No, it's just software engineer. It's very common, it's a broad term. So there's about 1,000 software engineers in Facebook. But usually the software engineers in Facebook aren't very specialized and change their positions quite often. For example, once a year, they will change a position on or a project which are they working on, so they wouldn't get bored.
So you were preparing for a very big move. You're moving to near San Francisco. That is very far away. How much time did you have to prepare for this move? And what are the kind of tasks that you have to get done before you can get on the plane and start your new life?
I was hired in April, and I am starting in Facebook in October, so it's half a year of preparations. There are some stuff need to be done about visa and about my movement of my stuff and so on. Here in Czech Republic, I will be renting flat and selling car and stuff like that, so it's kind of a preparation. I think it could be done in less time, but half a year is enough to get everything done.
And what about your family and your friends? Are they excited for you, or are they also a bit sad that you're leaving and you'll be so far away?
Most of my friends are happy that I'm leaving, because it is taken as a huge success to move outside Czech Republic and work for such a big company as Facebook is. So I think most of my friends are excited. My family, like my wife and my kids, are going with me there, so they are happy also. They are also a little bit scared or afraid, but they are, I think, biggest feeling is that they are happy. And my broader family, like my mother and my mother-in-law and so on, are quite sad, because their grandchildren and children will be so far along. So they are not so much happy, but they wish me this success too.
I guess that's what you would expect from the older generation, that they would have mixed feelings. So how do you think, I don't know how well you know the U.S., but what do you think will be the biggest difference between your life here in the Czech Republic and then your life in the U.S.?
I've already visited U.S. for about 3 weeks, so I think there's not so big difference as, for example, compared to India, because last year I spent 3 weeks in India, and the difference between India and Europe is much bigger than between the U.S. and Europe, so I think there's no big differences. Maybe the way of transportation, because here in Prague we are using a public transportation system, which is very good, and in the U.S. everybody is going by car, but Facebook is proud that only about half of their employees are going to work by car, and the other half uses a bike or public transportation system or Facebook shuttle buses. So I think this wouldn't be much different than Czech Republic either.
And is there anything in the U.S. that you already know or that you're really looking forward to?
Some nice living space, like house, because here in Czech Republic, me and my family are living in flat, which is good, but it's not big enough for us already. So I think this will be nice, because there's U.S. is big country, so there's a lot of space, and I hope that we will rent some nice house, and I think this will be better than here in Czech Republic for me.
And on the other hand, are there things that you just know you will miss from the Czech Republic? I don't know, the beer, the food, anything like that?
I'm not a big beer fan, so I drink beer, but not too much. But I will, of course, miss friends, and I will, of course, miss my natural language, because it's still quite hard for me to speak in English. So if every 8 hours per day will be in English at least, and if we make some friends in US, it will be most probably also English speaking. So this will be hard for me, I think, but I hope I will get used to it.
To go back to programming, you already mentioned that you work in PHP, and you also have a blog online about PHP tricks. You speak of elegant programming. So to the complete amateur, could you describe a bit what that entails?
Programming is describing some kind of idea, how to solve some problem, and you can describe this idea in a very long algorithm on several pages, or sometimes you can describe the idea just on a couple of lines, which is smart, which is fast, which is running fast, and which uses some kind of trick or elegant way to solve the problem. So I'm a fan of this way of programming, to more thinking about it and solve the problem in some elegant way than just to write several pages of some program, which also solves the problem, but it is hard to read and sometimes it is slower and so on. So if I'm talking about elegant programming, I mean this, to think a little bit more about the problem, then solve it in efficient and elegant way, than to write hundreds and hundreds of lines of unnecessary code.
And talking about problem solving, are there any problems that you've noticed with the Facebook site that you think you would have a solution for, or that you think should be solved?
I'm not sure, because there are some users are telling Facebook that their privacy settings are difficult to change and so on. I don't see this as a big problem, because the settings are there, and maybe they are hidden a little bit, but if you want to change it, you always can change it. So I don't see this kind of problems as big problems. So I don't know yet on which parts I will be working on.
Let's talk a bit about your personal Facebook usage. I think I read somewhere that you're not a big Facebook fiend.
I use Facebook maybe 10 minutes per day, so I'm not a heavy user of Facebook, which is sitting there several hours, because I see Facebook usage the same as other social networks, as some fun time, which sometimes can be good, but I like more to, I don't know, work or talk with my friends in personal, and or read some articles or so on. So I see that if you are using Facebook for, I don't know, 2 hours per day or more, it usually just reading some statuses of other people who are linking to some funny videos or stuff like that. So I think I see this as some light entertainment, and I don't look for it very much. So I'm using Facebook, but only to help me communicate with other people. Like if I'm organizing some event, or other people are organizing some event, the Facebook is very good media to get together and describe the event and so on.
So you are moving to the US now, but do you think you will make this move permanent, or do you plan to return to the Czech Republic?
I don't know yet. I talked about this with my family and my friends, and I think that I couldn't make the decision here from the Czech Republic now, and I think I will make it, for example, after 1 year spent in US, then I will see if I like it there more than here, or if I miss something, for example, my friends or family there. So I think I will decide in 1 year if I will spend there more time, or if I will return back, and maybe I will spend there 1 year or 3 years or 6 years or the rest of my life. I don't know yet. I think I could make this decision later if I spend there some time.
Sara Borůvka was talking there to Jakub Vrána. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, where we now visit the Sázava Monastery with Patrick Ryan.
The Sázava Monastery, which shares its name with the town and river Sázava, was declared a national cultural monument in 1962 by the Czechoslovak state. It is one of the oldest and best preserved monasteries in all of Bohemia. It was also important as an early cultural bridge between the eastern and western branches of the church, and because of its use of Old Slavonic, the first written Slavic language. I spoke with Slavka Motoshova in her office inside the walls of the monastery.
My job is a director of Monastery of Sázava, or Monastery of St. Procopius. I was a guide here from 1988, and now I am director.
The St. Procopius she referred to there is one of the Czech patron saints.
He was hermit, he was priest in Slovak language, and he was Benedict monks. He lived in the 11th century, and he lived here till end of the 11th century, but in 1204 the Rome Pope declared Procopius, Saint Procopius, because of his life and because of a lot of miracles about him.
One of his best-known miracles relates to the founding of the Sázava Monastery. As a hermit, Procopius lived alone in a cave under today's monastery. It was here, at this cave, that Procopius met Prince Ulrich and gained his trust and patronage.
Prince Ulrich was a prince of tribe of Přemyslis. Přemyslis were the first kings of Czech state, Bohemia. He was very passionate hunter, and one day he hunted the animals in this very wild forest, and he met Procopius. The prince was very thirsty, and he asked Procopius about some water. Procopius gave to him water in a wooden cup, but miracle, water transmuted in a wine. Prince Ulrich helped Procopius to found the first old Slavonic Benedict monastery in Bohemia.
Sázava Monastery grew over the centuries to include a variety of architectural styles, ranging from the 11th century foundations to Gothic towers and Baroque interiors. There's even a series of Romanesque columns and arches that was the beginning of a grand cathedral that stands incomplete today, after Hussite religious wars interrupted construction in 1421. But the most valuable part of the monastery is the chapter hall, which originally served as a meeting room for the monks' morning prayers. Monastery director Slavka Matosheva continues.
The chapter hall is one of the nicest Gothic halls in Bohemia. You can see very nice paintings of the 13th century. They celebrate motherhood of Our Lady Mary.
These murals were superbly restored in the 20th century after nearly being destroyed when the monastery fell into the hands of private owners who used the buildings as living quarters a century before.
In 19th century, the monastery was abolished by Austrian Emperor Joseph II, and new owners, this chapter hall, used like cellar. All sides were whitewashed, but between the First and Second World War, Benedict priest in Sázava, Father Clement, started to open Gothic paintings again. And our visitors can see them in full beauty.
Another interesting piece of art at Sázava Monastery is a large and imposing painting. They say it has been at the center of a series of miracles dating back to the mid-17th century.
One of the most interesting pictures in Sázava is a picture of face of St. Procopius in church of St. Procopius. From legend, we know this picture was found in ruin of a church after Hussite attacks. Procopius has shut eyes on the picture, but sometimes eyes of Procopius are opened. The first time it was in half past 17th century when people says Procopius was opening eyes, and I can say this year on July Procopius was opening eyes again. I think it's miracle.
Sounds of bells echo across the town of Sázava from the lofty Gothic bell tower. For almost 1,000 years, the bells have been a source of local pride. Legend has it the first bells at Sázava Monastery date from the 11th century. But those bells are gone forever, swept away by history, and only recently replaced through an act of generosity.
A lot of bells in Bohemia was taken away because of the First and Second World War. But now, on the Gothic Tower, we have three bells. They have names St. Wenceslaus, St. Ludmila, and St. Procopius, Czech patrons. They are from 1992, and I think it's very nice that one man, Mr. Kral from Sázava, collected about 1 million crowns during 2 years, and it's why we have again, after the Second World War, three bells.
Mm-hmm. After guided tours of the monastery, visitors are often seen staring up at the walls of the bell tower, mesmerized. After some time, they move around the tower for a different view and continue staring. Before I left Sazava Monastery, Slavka Matoshova explained the strange ritual.
If you find on the sides of our Gothic tower three stars from carved red stone, you wish one deepest wish in your life and your wish will be fulfilled.
Slavka Matoushova ending that edition of Spotlight by Patrick Ryan, which was first broadcast in October 2006. Coming up next, a rerun of our popular series From the Archives by David Vaughan.
This is the North American broadcast of Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia, and it's Magazine of the Air.
It was 5 years ago this week that our much-loved colleague Olga Santova died at the age of 71. As a child, she had spent most of World War II in New York, which was where she picked up her perfect East Side English. Olga became one of the most familiar voices of Radio Prague's English broadcasts during the political thaw of the 1960s, and she was also among the radio journalists who managed to carry on broadcasting secretly during the Soviet invasion of 1968.
We are transmitting in the 49-meter band on 6.055 megacycles. However, since this frequency is being jammed, please tune us in by turning slightly to the right or left of this position on your radio dial.
Many years later, Olga remembered back to that time.
A group of us managed, thanks to the technicians who helped us, and wouldn't have been possible without them, managed to concentrate in one of the radio buildings outside this main building, and for practically 2 weeks we did broadcast from there. The true story of what was going on. So that, I think, was probably the most glorious part of Radio Prague.
After the invasion, Olga's job at the radio was increasingly under threat, and she was forced to leave at the end of 1970. But just before being sacked, she did get the opportunity to cover an international music festival in Bratislava, where she recorded a brief interview with a youthful Cliff Richard.
Mr. Richard, when I tried to get to you a little while ago, I nearly knocked over. How do you keep from getting knocked over by fans?
Well, I'm afraid I have to just be a little bit faster than they are.
Is it hard work?
No, not really, because they're very understanding here. In England, they pester you all the time for autographs. And unfortunately, I can see some of the fans looking at me through the window now. I would like to sign the autographs, but I just don't have the time at the moment.
After she was thrown out of the radio, Olga was not allowed anywhere near a microphone for nearly 20 years.
I couldn't do anything that was connected with English. Mm. I sold fruit and vegetables, I knitted sweaters and so on and so forth. So I was going to retire the first day I possibly could. And instead I came back to radio and I felt I had to make up for all those years, and I've been doing my best to do so.
It was with great enthusiasm that Olga returned to Radio Prague after the fall of communism, and she made a huge contribution to our programme, showing more energy than many people half her age. Not long before she died, we asked Olga whether she felt bitter about the many years she lost.
I wouldn't say I was bitter. You know, partially one questions oneself, if you're really honest towards yourself, how much was all of this my own fault? Those political events didn't just fall upon us from up above. We made many mistakes ourselves, we made many errors. If you want to be honest, you have to start wondering how much we caused ourselves.
Olga Santova died on August 8, 2003, after a long battle with cancer. She was working right up to a few days before she died. I'll end with a brief extract from a programme Olga made with the BBC's Rosie Goldsmith in the early 1990s about the fine art of making Czech dumplings, something at which Olga was extremely adept.
Here's the pork, fresh from the oven.
Smells good.
So, we can sit down and eat.
And what are we supposed to drink with the pork and the cabbage and the knedeliki?
Only one thing possible. Beer. Czech beer, of course.
Of course, of course.
So, there we are, and all I have to do now is say Dobrou chuť, which is the Czech for bon appetit.
Dobrou chuť.
Dobrou chuť.
That edition of From the Archives by David Vaughan brings us to the end of today's show. We are always happy to get your comments and questions, so do get in touch. The address is Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2, and you can also send us an email at english@radio.cz. I'm Jan Richter, from all of us here at Radio Prague. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye. Thank you.
vous écoutez Radio.